Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Movie Addict Headquarters with your host, Betty Jo Tucker, author of Confessions of a Movie Addict, right here at www.blogtalkradio.com.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore. That's right, Dorothy. This is Movie Addict Headquarters. You don't have to be a movie addict to visit here, but if you are one, it's definitely the place for you. I'm your host, Betty Jo Tucker, wishing everyone a very happy new year from chilly Pueblo, Colorado, on this 6th of January, 2009. We have a great show today, folks, because the star of one of the most creative films I've seen in many a year is here today to talk about it. Devin Rattray, who played Buzz McAllister in two Home Alone films, so I'm sure most of our listeners know those two films, is all grown up now and in love with the most powerful woman in the world, Condoleezza Rice. At least, that's what filmmaker Sebastian Doggett, who earned an Emmy nomination for Project Runway, wants us to believe in his film Courting Condi, the movie we'll be discussing in just a few minutes. But first, I wanted to mention that my wonderful producer, Nikki Starr, is not able to be with us today. She's doing some technical work for the new BTR site, and so our friend Demos is going to be helping with the chat, and I want to thank Demos very much for doing that. But I know that my excellent co-host, Jazz Shaw, is here, so let's check with him and see if he's ready to help get things rolling along.
Oh, ready as always, Betty Jo, and I've been looking forward to this. Condi Rice is one of my favorite figures in politics, and as you know, I also do a lot of media work in political coverage, so I found this a wonderful crossover topic for me, that sort of intersection between movies, one of my greatest loves, and politics, you know, which is more my professional interest, you know, so it was a great topic.
Well, I knew that you would be the one, the perfect co-host for this particular, well, all the time, Jazz, but especially for Courting Condi. And let's bring on Devin right now. I'm just so excited about having him on our show. Devin, welcome to Movie Addict Headquarters.
Why, thank you so much for having me on, Betty Jo. It's really a thrill and an honor, and it's a wonder to be on the miracle of internet radio. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for saying that this is a miracle. I sort of think it's quite magical myself, and I'm just so glad you could be with us today. I'm sorry that your director wasn't able to be on the show with us, but that just gives us more time to talk about him too, right?
Well, absolutely. I'd like all the listeners to give a collective poo-poo to our director because he's over in France right now, and he's of course cannot get the technology together to call to get a cross-Atlantic connection. So, it's just going to be me, which is perfectly fine with me. I don't mind because it's just all the more time to talk about my favorite subject, me.
I know. I thought that you'd feel that way, but I do want to congratulate you and Sebastian for this this Courting Condi. That film really bowled me over. And you know, Devin, I think the PR that's been put out about it, calling it, let's see, cinema's first ever musical docu-tragedy comedy.
Yes. It rolls trippingly off the tongue if you say it a few times fast. The world's first cinematic musical docu-tragicomedy. And it's not a docu-comma-tragedy, because we have to keep in mind it is lo and behold, rather funny to watch. So it's a musical docu-tragicomedy.
I'm waiting to see which category this shows up in on Netflix when it becomes available.
I don't know where it'll be.
Yeah, probably show up like jazz concert.
Well, all I know is it's a weird, wonderful, and highly opinionated movie.
A lot of people say, you know, when making a documentary, there are three different films. There's the documentary that you have in your mind when you want to film a subject. Then there's the film that actually comes out when you have filmed the subject and the tape that you actually get and the situations that you're in that you couldn't possibly ever plan on being in because life is so unpredictable. And then there's the third film that you make when you're in the editing room.
Right.
And once you have all the footage together, you know, adding in a scene in a certain spot or cutting out certain sentences or phrases, or you can really make whatever type of film you wish in the editing room. And that's where you get a lot of decisions that have to be made in the film. We started off with one film, and as you saw throughout my journey, we clearly came out with another outcome at the end.
I know, and where did the idea for this film come from, Devin? Do you know, was it your idea, or was it Sebastian's idea, or were the two of you together on this from the very beginning?
Well, I'm supposed to say it was Sebastian's idea, but since he's having some snails and champagne, it was all my idea.
It was all Devin.
Good for
you. It was all my idea. I did it all.
He rode along on his coattails the whole time.
I know.
Absolutely. I only needed him because he was a movable C-stand. He was holding my camera. That's all he did.
Just followed you around. I know. Well, he had an important role in front of the camera, too, that gave me a few chuckles. And what a lot of interesting information
this movie presents, and
in a highly entertaining way. And how did you get the starring role?
Well, actually, I mean, if you do want me to give you some real information.
Please do.
Okay, all right. I'll pepper some truth into my own egomaniacism. Sebastian did propose the idea to me. He will freely acknowledge this. Actually, I don't know if he will or not, but I'm gonna expose him right now. He had, as a child or as a young man, had dreams about naughty dreams about Margaret Thatcher. Sebastian is British. The listener should know that. He is as English as they get. And like tea and crumpets all the way.
That explains a lot. Okay.
Yeah, so he's having rather inappropriate dreams about Margaret Thatcher scolding him with a ladle while she was cooking in the kitchen wearing just an apron.
Okay, this is a PG-rated show now, I'll just remind you.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, the demented subconscious of Sebastian Doggart is anything but parentally guided, let me tell you. this had a lasting impression on him, and he had quite a lot of issues with women in power and women of political importance and women of world importance, which Condoleezza is. I mean, for the last 8 years, regardless of what you thought of her, she was the single most important woman in American politics.
For sure.
As, you know, of course, when the new Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, came in, she tried to assert herself as the new most important woman in politics, but Condi has a way of retaining her throne, so to speak.
Right, spoken as the lead.
Courting Condi.
You know, this was quite a different role than the bully you portrayed in Home Alone. I just saw Home Alone about the umpteenth time over the holidays, and there you were, as mean as ever, a little Macaulay Culkin.
Yeah, you know, I mean, as much satisfaction as I get each year watching myself torture small little Macaulay, it's, a lot of people don't realize that movie is now 18 years old.
Oh, my gosh.
And so, you know, Macaulay is in his late 20s. He's 27, I believe. And I'm now
30. And yet
30.
Those films are getting up there along the same lines as It's a Wonderful Life. I was noticing that this holiday season. If you're sitting at home and flipping through the cable channels, it's like Wonderful Life, Home Alone. Wonderful Life, Home Alone.
And The Christmas Story.
Yes. I'm not quite as old as Jimmy Stewart yet, thankfully. But, yeah, you really – and one of the ironies in Home Alone, of course, when we're in France is we're watching a scene from It's a Wonderful Life dubbed over in French. And none of the kids can understand a word of it. The irony is just the irony piles up on itself when you see that now it has become a Christmas classic. And each year around this time, you know, whether I like it or not, or whether, you know, I've gotten tired of the movie or not, I'm a part of something that's become a holiday institution, and it's going to affect generations for years to come. There's already a new generation of people who are growing up just watching Home Alone on DVD or during the holidays, you know, that weren't around when it was in the theaters. And they Facebook me and they email me, and people are still, you know, are you Buzz from Home Alone? You know, I get an email once a week at least from, Istanbul or Norway or Ireland, all over the place. People are still emailing me every other day. I get Facebooks because they just want to connect with something that they grew up with.
That's marvelous. I think that is really marvelous. And you certainly got a chance to show a very different side of you here in courting Condi. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your character in courting Condi and how it's different from Buzz McAllister?
Well, sure. Certainly. I mean, everyone pretty much knows Buzz McAllister. He's not an enigma. He's pretty easy to figure out, and he's not exactly one of the Mensa people. You know, he's not gonna discover any cure for cancer or anything like that. And he's just a mean, obnoxious bully. And a lot of people sort of just assume that that's who they're gonna meet when they meet me, sort of obnoxious frat boy. And you know, I don't disappoint them usually. I just punch them in the face and walk away. No, I'm just kidding. No, I'm quite different from that, as it was, and I'm sorry. One moment, please. Oh, okay. I'm actually much nicer than that. And this character has a lot to do with what I really am in life. I'm a nice guy, I guess that's what it was. And Sebastian wanted to. Hold on, I'm sorry, one moment. Sorry, are we still... Sorry, I was having a little trouble with the phone. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Oh, yeah,
right.
Sounds great.
Okay, good. Sorry. So Sebastian wanted to sort of capitalize on this sort of listless, hapless, romantic, sort of kind of oafish guy. You know, someone who is truly love-struck by somebody who he's never met. And it's the exact polar opposite of what people are used to in Home Alone. You know, he's easily manipulated. Sebastian is sort of he plays sort of the bad guy in the movie. A lot of it was cut out, but he's sort of like the one who's, you know, leading my character along the way. And my parents play my parents in the movie.
Those are your real parents.
Those are my real parents in the movie.
I thought they were
both excellent in it. They had no trouble playing my parents.
No stress and, for them.
I noticed there were more people with the same surname on the IMDb listing for the film, yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. That really is. That's Peter and Anne. That's my parents. And they, they're pleading and begging me not to go off with this, you know, mad British man on this journey, and not to waste my money and not to leave home to go and do this. And, you know, they're hoping, you know, that I don't get arrested. You know, this
for stalking, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, in case the listeners don't know, that's the main thing. Devin goes out to find out everything he can about Condoleezza Rice and also to get advice about how to woo her and win her. And in the meantime, he writes these wonderful love discs and and films them and sends them to Condoleezza.
You know, it's hard to even say with a straight face. The stuff that we do in this film, it's pretty outrageous, but we do it. And the songs are all authentic. I wrote two of them.
Oh, great.
I wrote Invisible and Golden, which is one of the first songs and the last song in the movie.
Those were wonderful songs. I especially like the Invisible. That was pretty touching.
Oh, wow.
If
thank
I can
you
jump
very
in
much.
With one of the early questions that came to mind, though, I was trying to imagine what the biggest challenges were in making this film, and number one would have had to be, did you make any effort to actually get Condoleezza Rice involved in the project, you know, and you know, as opposed to just using archival footage or anything, you know, have her make an appearance, perhaps do a love scene, something like that, and failing that, what were the other, what made this particular type of project so challenging?
Well, when you send love disc to the State Department, you know, they're gonna sort of prick their ears up and sort of say, "What's this?" We did indeed let the State Department know that we were filming this movie, and we did invite Condoleezza to participate in it, should she so desire. You know, we would, you know, we wrote an ending where Condoleezza agreed to meet us, and. You know, we have tea or whatever we do, and, you know, I would, of course, propose to her, and then she would say yes, and we'd run off together and live happily ever after. That ending didn't quite happen. I will spoil that's a spoiler alert.
Okay, spoiler alert, right.
But as much as we did try and get her attention for this film, she somehow, for some reason, denied to be on camera as a part of this. However, she did send her agents, her minions, after us once we reached D.C. to make sure that we weren't out of our minds, that we weren't really stalking her.
I can't blame her.
We did receive visits from State Department agents on a Saturday morning at our – we had rented out a bed and breakfast for a couple of weeks while we were shooting in D.C., for those listening, the climax of the film takes place in Washington, D.C., where we are set up headquarters and really start a small campaign to try and get Condoleezza to just go out on a date with me. And they showed up at our house, at our bed and breakfast, early in the morning when the one day that we had off, they show up when I'm in my pajamas. And Sebastian is, you know, running around at this time, frantic, saying, "The State Department is here. The State Department is here. I'm going to Gitmo. I'm going to Guantanamo Bay."
You know, like, that could be the sequel.
That would be. That would be a great sequel. Sebastian gets deported.
Sebastian and Devin in Guantanamo Bay, although I think we had a movie with a similar name. You're dealing with a lot of logistical challenges in making a film where you try to get involved with the government, particularly at that level, Washington, D.C., with current terrorist issues, obviously a lot of challenges. Looking back on the whole project, did you learn anything for that sort of an effort for other filmmakers? Anything you would have done differently in how you approached trying to get the desired results in making the film?
Well, I will say for one thing, I do know a little bit more firsthand now where this Homeland Security is going and how on top of it people are. Like with the State Department, they knew as soon as we landed in Washington, D.C., they knew where we were going and where we were headed. They could have very easily have bugged the place. I don't know. They knew who I was. As soon as I walked down the stairs when I saw them on Saturday morning, one of the agents turned to me and said, "Hey, my kids love you." I was like, "What? Who are you?" And he was like, "Oh, sorry, I'm Agent Mike with the State Department, and my kids love you. Every Christmas we watch Home Alone."
Buzz rocks, okay.
Yeah, so they knew me, you know, and they, of course, they knew me as Buzz, so that's what made it even more bizarre, I'm sure, for them. They were trying to, you know, they're trying to follow Buzz to see if Buzz has turned into a stalker going after Condoleezza Rice. I'm sure it was confusing for them. What we did learn as filmmakers, you know, when meddling with the federal government, you really got to have your papers in order. You really got to make sure that even though you're making a comedy, there are certain lines that can't really be crossed. They were, you know,
sure.
I don't mean to
yeah.
break it to you, but this administration doesn't have too much of a sense of humor about itself. And
I've heard
they
rumors.
Were, yeah. Yeah,
I'm
they
shocked.
Were. I'm shocked as well. Yeah, I was totally shocked. They did everything but frisk Sebastian.
And for any of the federal agents who do listen to the show regularly, and I know you do, we don't actually know Devin, and we have really no relationship.
That's true. So. That's true. We only know him in cyberspace. So.
Trust me, you don't need to speak into the. You don't need to speak into the microphone if you're talking to me, because you've already been bugged, and I'm sure they're totally redlisting you, and they've already got a file on you.
Oh, I've got one. Don't worry.
Well, Kevin, what was the most fun that you had making this documentary?
You know, there were a whole lot of scenes, chunks and chunks of scenes that were cut out of this movie. We had 209 hours of footage.
Wow.
That we had to whittle down to an hour and a half. So there is loads of material that we really, that you know, it was sort of like, you know, saying goodbye, like giving up a child, you know, each scene that you had to let go of. It was painful editing, but there were some scenes where I had, you know, I am actually a city boy from Manhattan, New York City, and there was one scene where I had to go onto a firing range and learn to fire a gun.
Oh.
Because Condoleezza is a huge supporter of the Second Amendment, and her father was a proud gun owner. And, you know, how was I expected to win her heart if I didn't know how to shoot a gun or know anything about guns?
Right.
So they took me onto a firing range, and they had provided for me a life-size poster of Osama bin Laden. And this is true. I'm telling you, life is stranger than anything we could have written. They gave me a rifle and earphones and everything to muffle the noise, and I spent the day learning to shoot. And for me, that was kind of a thrill. You know, that was something that I never would get to do in Manhattan, or at least I'm not admitting to it. And there were, you know, it's something that was kind of cool. There were lots of other shots that we did. We did stuff on the beach that was lots of fun to do. To me, running around Washington, D.C., and actually interviewing politicians and interviewing, you know, published authors who had written biographies about these people, people who won Pulitzer Prizes, the editor of Newsweek. I mean, I really got to meet a lot of important people interviewing, and I got to hear their candid opinions about not only Condoleezza, but about politics in general and what this administration has or has not done for the country and what they thought of it. And getting to know them personally, I found most interesting. Unfortunately, a lot of those interviews, they had to trim them down and just use the stuff that they're talking about Condoleezza. But getting to know them, we would have hour-long interviews with some of these people, and I really enjoyed getting to talk to them. And
I'll bet Jazz would like to have the outtakes on those interviews because of his.
Yeah, the outtakes are honestly just as entertaining as the.
You know, Betty Joe
is
touching on a question that I really wanted to sneak in during the interview. As a matter of fact, is there going to be, do you anticipate a point in the future where that sort of stuff will be available, like, you know, on a DVD release where we get to see some of the deleted scenes, the outtakes, some, you know, blooper reels, things like that? Because it sounds like, you know, in some ways for the political fans, that might even be more fun or interesting, you know, than just the experience of watching the film as a standalone.
Clearly there will be an entire DVD of just outtakes when this is released on DVD. There's more than enough. I mean, we have stuff that is so outrageous that just couldn't make the cut. You can actually go onto the website now and check out just a couple of the outtakes. It's courtingcondy.com, and you can see a trailer of the film as well as some of the outtakes already posted up there. We have like
I enjoyed the trailer immensely. For everybody listening, go there and check it out at courtingcondy.com. Some great stuff there, but I know there's got to be tons more we'd all love to see.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And, in fact, if people are in the Denver area listening, there's going to be a screening of the film in its entirety at the Festivus Film Festival. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Festivus, yes.
Festivus, thank you. That's on January 9th. And the screening is at 9 p.m. at the Oriental Theater.
Oh, great. And
you guys know the address? That's at 4335 West 44th Avenue in Denver, Colorado.
Wow,
call now.
If you're in Denver, don't miss that. And I understand that you and Sebastian are also scheduled for a question and answer session at Denver University on Friday, January 23rd in Storm Hall's Davis Auditorium.
Absolutely.
So you're going to be taking over Colorado here the last part of January, right?
Oh, we're trying very hard to. We're definitely going to be there. We're definitely going to answer all questions. The Q&A after the film is what I really look forward to going around the country, because people who watch this film, regardless of whether they agree or disagree with it, they definitely have an opinion about the movie. And talking with the audience afterwards is always enlightening. It's always fun. You know, there are playful debates. There's heated debates. I've had some very upset people who have watched the film. There have been some grateful people who have had, you know, greeted me with tears in their eyes, thanking me for making the film. And everybody, one way or the other, has an opinion. So January 23rd, definitely go to the Denver University screening.
Not to detract from the fun elements of the interview, but you touched on something that I really wanted to get to. Anytime you get into politics, you're into controversial territory, some kind of muddy waters, and at least until the Obama run for the presidency, Condi was a very beloved figure on the right wing in the country and sparked a lot of heated emotions and debates, being attacked from the left, beloved by the right, et cetera. Did that play into the post-production experience? Have you had any problems scheduling screenings for the film? Are you seeing maybe pushback, you know, from the right in certain areas? Has that played a big role in the post-production activities?
Very much so, actually. As a matter of fact, we were accepted to screen the film at Stanford University, which is where, of course, she was provost at Stanford University for many years. The first
right.
woman provost, and definitely the first black woman to ever reach that position. And, of course, it is, you know, Stanford is a huge hotbed of debate and controversy about, because everybody there has an opinion about her as well. She, and they know her firsthand. I mean, she taught there before she became provost. And we were accepted to show our film there, and we were very happy to. We were delighted to, especially since Ms. Rice has said that she's going to return to Stanford and take up a position teaching or some administrative position there when she gets out of Washington. So we thought that this was all the more appropriate to have this as sort of her homecoming, have a little screening of the film. And the film was accepted and had been screened privately, and it wasn't until a few weeks after we had alerted Ms. Rice's office that it would be showing at Stanford that we got a call from one of the heads of the Stanford Film Festival saying that our film was no longer allowed to be shown at Stanford. And we
wow.
were completely shut out of it. Yes, we were
mysteriously no longer welcome.
Wow.
Mysteriously no longer welcome. And
but
then they said it was something about, you know, they said, well, it's just not, they said, first of all, there was a scheduling conflict that they had scheduled two films to show at the same time. Then they said the film was too long. Then they just said, well, you know, we just don't like the film anymore.
Oh, wow. So. Well, I know that it's a highly controversial film, and I didn't necessarily agree with a lot of the things that were brought up about Condoleezza,
okay.
but it's certainly well done and creative and entertaining, and I'm not a bit surprised that it's being acclaimed on the film festival circuit. It's already won Best Performance for Devin Matrey at the Orlando Film Festival. Most Creative Concept at the Fort Lauderdale International Film Festival.
Once again, Best Rubenly didn't need Sebastian at all because Devin was all the talent.
That's right. See?
Best
I hope he's
documentary.
Enjoying his blue cheese right now in France, wherever he is.
And it's nominated. Maybe you have information about this. The last time I checked, it had been nominated as Best Comedy Musical at the Mammoth Film Festival. Do you know how that worked out yet?
Actually, Sebastian is the only one who knows that, and he was going to reveal it today on the show. So
oh.
we are still in the dark about what they have to say about our film. But I can talk all I want about best performance at the Orlando Film
That's
Festival.
That's right. Best performance. And
best male performance in a feature film at the Orlando Film Festival. And I was up against, now this is what blows my mind. It actually makes me almost embarrassed. I apparently was up against John Malkovich.
Oh, no.
Yes. John Rooker, who's another great character actor, and Bill Pullman.
Bill Pullman?
Yes.
Oh, wait till Nikki hears about this. She's a big Bill Pullman fan.
Well, I'm a huge Malkovich fan, so I don't think I think it does you tremendous credit to be John Malkovich, and I'm not being facetious in any way. I have tremendous respect for him as an actor.
I absolutely do. This is an Academy Award-nominated actor, Tony Award winner, and I was I was beside myself when they actually gave it out. Maybe Malkovich phoned in his performance for this film. I don't know why I beat him out, but, hey, I'll take the award.
Well, you got it, and congratulations to you for that. I'm curious to know, Devin, what's your favorite, your favorite scene in Courting Condi?
Wow, that's tough. Again, it was cut out of the film, so... My very favorite scene was, I will talk briefly about that, and then I'll talk about some scenes that were left in. Sebastian had a much bigger role in the original cut of the movie. He was much more of a sort of maniacal manipulator, where he was trying to get me to do all these things. You see a little bit of it in the beach scene, the infamous beach scene. Listeners will know exactly what I mean when they see the film, but he tries to get me to go in the to go the full Monty, shall we say, on the beach in the bus.
No.
Yeah. And he's literally trying to take my clothes off in the film. That was not my favorite scene. That was my least favorite scene. But he's much more in the film. He's much more. They had to cut it out, but he's supposed to be much more of a maniacal manipulator. And I snap at the end, and I actually punch him. In the face, and then I have this scene. Well, we actually have a scene where we make up, and we both found ourselves crying when the scene was shot because there's such a long, stressful shoot, and then 18-19 hour days, and at the end of it, there was such animosity in the scene right before where I had hit him, and then making up for it, we're both sort of looking at each other, and I get a little emotional, and then he gets a little emotional, and I find myself, I'm starting to hold back tears, and I see him welling up, and it's just a nice moment of real acting that gave, I thought, a levity and a real sincerity to the film, so it wasn't just two knuckleheads going across country trying to track down the secretary. But that scene didn't make it because it didn't forward the scene along, and now that I'm telling it sounds pretty gay. But
not that there's anything wrong with that. But what's
not
your favorite
that there's anything
scene?
Wrong with that.
But what's your favorite scene that was in the movie?
The favorite scene, my favorite scene was actually working with my parents, working with my mom.
Yeah.
I had never I'm a film student myself, and all my student films that I'd done, I would always put my mom in some way, and it was always her voice. I always put my mom's voice in somehow, like whether she was leaving an answering machine message or whether she's like knocking on a door or something. I always had my mom in the movie, which is something I learned from Martin Scorsese. He always has his mother in his films. And this film, I actually got to act with my mother and my father, who I had never done, and never done either of this. And both my parents are professional actors. They've been in the New York theater scene for 45 years each, and I had never gotten a chance to work with them on film. And it was really interesting to see them because they're pretty intense scenes. My mother's crying, begging me not to go. My father's shouting at me, asking me if I've lost my mind. And I have to really plead with them and convince them to give me their blessings and to let me go do this. And they really went for it. They took it very seriously. They didn't just think of this as like a student film or anything. They really acted in it, and it was intense. And it was a lot of fun. It really brought us together, and it brought my parents into the movie a lot more. They supported it a lot more afterwards because we shot in my parents' house. All those scenes where I'm leaving home and coming back to home, that's all my parents' house.
Oh,
and I don't know if you've ever... I don't know if you've ever had a film shot in your home, but it's kind of an inconvenience, I'll tell you that.
Actually, I have, and yes, it is terribly inconvenient.
Mm-hmm.
But getting you just touched on a really
footage.
Nice point that I like to get into the experience of the actors in the film. Sometimes you've done work on some huge projects, like the Home Alone thing, and this is, if I may say, a bit more of like the guerrilla filmmaking, sort
mm-hmm.
of on the road traveling kind of thing. How did the experience differ for you? I mean, what was it like comparing this project to some of the other projects and perhaps larger ones you've done?
Well, it absolutely is guerrilla filmmaking in its rawest form. I mean, we had a script, but the script was like, in this scene, Devin learns to shoot a gun. There was no like specific dialogue or anything, so it really was guerrilla documentary film style filmmaking. I've been in huge films before. Dennis the Menace was a huge film. I just came off of Bruce Willis's new film. It's called Surrogates, coming out next Thanksgiving. And that's a huge, huge Disney-produced, $100 million movie. And I got a double-wide trailer and, DVD player and espresso maker in my trailer and all that. And for Courting Condi, my trailer was the front seat of an 18-passenger van. that's the truth. It was like, no holds barred. We were bare-boned in terms of budget. We had a van and a camera and a sound guy. It's like a bunch of sort of smelly film guys in a van, and that was where I had to. I could prepare and change clothes. That's always fun for a big guy like me to change clothes in the front seat of a van.
Betty Jo, when that other film comes out, we have got to have Devin back and talk about that.
Oh, absolutely. And the film that you just mentioned, Devin.
Surrogates.
It's directed by one of my favorite directors, Jonathan Mostow, correct?
I'm so glad that you know him and that you appreciate him. He is one of the nicest men in Hollywood.
Well,
and let me put in a
vote
for Bruce Willis, by the way, one of my favorite actors. I think he has an incredible range compared to, some people who try to just position him as an action film guy. And I love the work he's done, too. How was
Jonathan,
that working with him?
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
How was it working with Bruce? Because I find him to be a great actor.
He is, he truly is, the icon that everyone thinks he is. When you see him on the set, it's Bruce Willis on the set. And he is a very intense actor. He can horse around a lot, like his David Addison, moonlighting days. But when it comes down to it, when they say, quiet on the set, roll camera, he's there 150% intense. And if you have a scene with him, that happens to be a little intense, which I did, it's thrilling. Because I'm totally method and completely concentrated and focused on my role, and it's just wonderful to sort of feed off of somebody who is giving enough to be, he's giving enough to let you do your thing, and he's completely there the entire moment.
Some of the listeners, by the way, have been logging in as you've been chatting, and I just did want to point out one thing where one of our listeners, nice guy Eddie, came in and said that he is a huge Devin fan, and he means huge. He's 6'6", 327 pounds.
Oh, well, thank you so much for joining the chat. Who's Eddie, did you say?
Nice guy Eddie. Boy, I'm glad he's
here.
Nice guy Eddie, yes.
Well,
I'm glad he's a nice guy.
It.
Boy, at 6'6" and 327, I hope he's nice.
That's right.
Imagine if he was grumpy, ornery, don't talk to me, Eddie.
We wouldn't want to have him hanging around. But, Devin, you've got a number of new projects coming out, I noticed. Not just the Bruce Willis, Jonathan Mostow film, but what are these about? The Two Bobs, The Order of... Redemption, The Flying Scissors, The Super Agent, those are all coming out.
I have, it's actually, 2008 was not a bad year for Dev. I have six films coming out within the next year. The two Bobs I'm very excited about. That was actually my Condi was my first leading role in a film. It being a musical docu-tragicomedy, though, you know, it's not really your traditional film. The Two Bobs is my first lead in a traditional comedy, and it is a straight-up, no-holds-barred, all-out R-rated comedy. It is a raunchy, fun film. Gosh, it was so much fun to make that. I play one of the two Bobs, where we are the world's most gifted and youngest video game programmers on the planet. And we have had incredible success in the past. Every film, every video game that we've made has gone platinum, and we're about to release our brand new video game, and somebody steals the software for our video game, and we have to go terrorizing. We have to go all across Austin, Texas, looking for the software, and madcap and hilarity ensues.
Wow, we'll be looking forward to that.
Absolutely. We saw some of the buzz for the two Bobs already showing up on G4 TV right before the holidays, and it looked pretty exciting.
Oh, yeah? Oh, great.
And what about Order of Redemption?
Order of Redemption is a film I shot with Tom Berenger, who's another great intense actor.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, I play. He's a recovering drug addict defense attorney, and I play his defense counsel, and that's a great film with Armand Asante's in it as well, and it's like a courtroom drama, so you know I get to show off some more serious chops in that film as well.
Betty Jo, I don't know if we even have time, but one of the other listeners is asking the question. Ask Devin about his music. It's terrific. I wasn't aware of this. Devin, you're also a musician?
Well, he did mention about the music that he did for Courting Condi, so that's great. So you do have other music that you've worked on, right, Devin?
Indeed I have, yes. I play five instruments badly. I'm self-taught. And I have I do write music on my own. I had a band, Little Bill and the Beckleys, who are a fantastic rock band that I had a couple years ago. And I wrote two of the songs for this film, Courting Condi, and I have more songs that I have been writing. I'm actually looking to make an album this year.
Oh, great. I can't wait to hear that. Can you believe, Jazz, our time is almost up?
Oh, God, we have to make this a longer show.
Devin, you have been one of the most fun guests that we've ever had on
Absolutely.
Movie Addict Headquarters.
I really appreciate that. That's very nice of you. I can't believe I actually yapped on for 45 minutes.
Well, you were just great, and I hope that we'll get you back again soon, and I know I speak for Jazz when I say we wish you all the best with Courting Condi and with all your other exciting projects.
Well, thank you so much.
You're very, very welcome. It's been such a pleasure.
My absolute pleasure, too.
And we'll be hearing more from you, I'm sure. So this is Betty Jo Tucker giving a big shout-out to the folks at Blog Talk Radio for all their support in connection with our show. Thanks, as always, to Jazz for being such a great co-host, to Nikki and Demos for all of their help, and for everything they do to make Movie Addicts Headquarters so much fun. Special thanks to everyone who listened live or to the archives or took part in the chat. We really appreciate your participation. Please come back next Tuesday, January 13th at 4 p.m. Eastern Time for a discussion with the great Tippi Hedren about her acting experience working with Alfred Hitchcock in The Birds and Marnie and other films, and her important current work with the Shambhala Preserve. It should be another great show. In the meantime, check out our film reviews at realtalkreviews.com. That's R-E-E-L, realtalkreviews.com. Now, as usual, here's the very talented A.J. Daniels to take us out with a song we dedicate to all our Blog Talk Radio listeners.
Hello? Hello?